We're delving into the folk music traditions of Scotland right now on Travel with Rick Steves with Jim and Susie Malcolm. Jim also specializes in putting the words of the beloved Scots poet Robert Burns to music. I'd like you to just kind of give me a quick montage of some representative dimensions or styles of Scottish traditional music.
Okay, we will start on the East Coast with a song from the fishing tradition. This is a call to young women to come and jump on a train and go and gut fish in England.
Go and gut fish in England. Let's go.
Fishing lassies, it's come awa wi' me. Fae Cairn, Bog and Cambly and fae Inveralachy, fae Buckie and fae Aberdeen and a' the country in. We're a watty got the head and we're a watty and a tin. Ye rise up in the morning wi' your bundle in your hand. Be at the station early or you'll surely hate to stand. Tak plenty to eat and a kettle for your tea, or you'll maybe die of hunger on the way to Yarmouth Quay. The journey, it's a longing, it takes a day or twa, and when you reach your lodgings, it's soon to sleep you'll fall. But you'll rise at five with the sleep still in your ee. You're a what to find the gutting yards along the Yarmouth Quay.
Nice. Okay, I'm going to England to make some serious money. What's another one?
Well, should we play a bit of a lament?
Yes. Okay.
This is Jim's song that he wrote using the tune Neil Gow's Lament on the Death of His Second Wife, which is a much-loved lament from fiddle music.
Ben my hoose in the nook where the bran nears the tay, mahung Barnum's great oaks on a lang summer's day, while salmon lie still in water below, I will mind on your tune as I ticht in my bow, and it brings harmony to the air that I play, on the day you were taken away. All around me is beauty, bright bird song and plenty, a dram of good whiskey by a warm fire's glow. Scarlet fruit fill their gilly tree, but nae joy can stay me, for you and me, Maggie, were fiddle and bow.
I can imagine that being very effective in changing the energy level and the atmosphere in a pub, right in the middle of a high-powered session.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
So beautiful, a lament. The music and traditions of Scotland are alive and well as we're hearing from Jim and Susie Malcolm right now on Travel with Rick Steves. When they're not touring to bring their music to the world, they make their home in Perthshire, where Jim has been seen fly fishing in the River Tay. What's another?
Well, let's sing something from the farming tradition, as I was brought up on a farm in Aberdeenshire. So I'll sing you a bit of a bothy ballad. The bothy is where the unmarried men would bunk together on a farm.
Okay.
So a whole musical tradition.
It's a dormitory for the farm boys.
Yes. Oh, okay. It's a bit like bunkhouse cowboy songs.
All right.
Very similar tradition, yeah. Lots of young men together. No entertainment other than their own singing.
Not enough girls.
All the songs are about girls, right? Yeah.
Okay. Bothy.
As I come in by Afford and for to get a fee, 'twas there I met with Jamie Broon, and there we did agree. Dum a hi dum do, a hi dum day, a hi dum a diddle, dum a hi dum day. So I agreed with Jamie Brune in the year 91 to gang him and Kai's second pair and be his aura man. Dum a hi dum do, a hi dum de, hi dum a little, dum a hi dum de. He said, I'm the gaffer o' the place, and that's the mistress there. And if you want some bread and cheese, you'll surely get your share. Dum a hi dum do, a hi dum de, hi dum a diddle, dum a hi dum de. Then I get to the stable, my pairy for to view, and fix to wear a dandy pair of chestnut and a blue. Dum a hi dum do, a hi dum de, hi.
Nice. Thank you. I can just, I can see the farm boys there. I can just, I can imagine. It's nice to get the context. Do you set that up when you're performing? I imagine.
Well, that's really interesting because it actually mentions the year.
Very unusually, that song mentions the year 1891, which is right bang in the middle of the sort of era of the Bothy ballad.
Okay. I have this sense that you both really have a love of Scotland, your homeland. Is there one song that really speaks to, like, from your heart about your love of your country?
Well, we live on the River Tay in Perth, and upstream is a big lake or loch that the Tay emerges from. And there's a beautiful song called the Loch Tay Boat Song. And it's about a young man who's rowing across this wonderful, beautiful, a bit glass, water's glass, and the mountains are blue and stuff. But his heart is broken because he has been spurned by the Nian Rhu, the girl with the red hair.
So this is Jim and Susie Malcolm, the Loch Tay,
the Loch Tay boat song. Yeah.
As I've done my work of day and I row my boat away, doom the waters of Loch Tay, as evening light is fading, and I look upon Ben Lawes, where the afterglory glows, and I think on two bright eyes and a melting mouth. Below, she's my beauteous near, she's my joy and sorrow too, and although she is unto, well, I cannot live without her, for my heart's a boat in tow. And I'd give the world to know why she means to let me go as I sing hurdy hurdo.
Wow. Jim, you are so good on that guitar, but I got to say, your voices, when they come together, you and Susie.
Thank you.
You guys were destined to sing together. I just love the way you harmonize.
We actually met at a kind of open mic folk night, a bit like a session, and we both sang. And
you just thought, hey, let's get it together. Well, your latest album is The Berries. Susie and Jim, thanks so much, and best wishes with your music.
Thank you.
It's been wonderful to appear on your show. Thank you.
Let's do it again.
Yeah.
Since we recorded our interview, Jim and Susie Malcolm have released another CD of their songs. It's called Auld Tune Shuffle. They're also planning a concert tour of the Eastern U.S. this October and November, with dates scheduled from Massachusetts to Alabama. Details will be posted on their website, jimmalcolm.com. There's a slightly eccentric side to England that you might be lucky enough to stumble on next time you're exploring the English countryside. If you time it right, you might see the grown-ups playing King of the Hill and tug-of-war in the Cotswold Olympics, a competition that's brought rich and commoner together on a level playing field, so to speak, for more than 400 years. Fun and games can also teach you a thing or two about British history. To explain, we're joined now by Blue Badge tour guides Gillian Chadwick, Roy Nichols, and Tom Hooper.
It's a pleasure.
So when you guides think of quirky traditions in Britain that a tourist might stumble upon, that really just knocks them over, what's a good example of something quintessentially English that you can see in the countryside? Gillian?
Well, they could be in the Cotswolds during the time of the Cotswold Olympics, which is an eccentricity that we all love. Been going for hundreds of years, although they were closed down during the time of Oliver Cromwell, who didn't like people having fun, and also the Victorians. And one of the highlights is shin kicking. You have to prepare for your shin kicking by hitting your own shin with a wooden block to harden it up. And then during the actual games, you kick your opponent's shin with nail-topped boots.
Whoa.
And the one who collapses first.
It's a short battle, I would think.
I would have thought so, yes. Yeah.
Are any of these Olympics from the Cotswolds still going?
Oh, yes.
It's an annual thing or something?
Yeah, it's an annual thing.
So what are some other events you might find at the Cotswold Olympics?
Tossing the sheep is one.
Tossing the sheep?
It's not a real sheep. It's actually a big sack full of straw, and they have to toss it using a pitchfork over a high bar, a bit like high jumping, but without jumping.
The sheep does the...
Tom, is there another example of the Olympics? What about the ferret thing? I've heard that in the Cotswolds they had these wild
little
animals.
It's not just... The ferrets are those small weasel-like animals they use for hunting rabbits and things.
Sharp teeth.
Sharp claws.
And what did they used to do?
Well, they're for hunting rabbits and things, but as a joke more than anything else. It's not an old tradition. Men will compete, and it's always men, to put ferrets down their trousers and see how long they can actually survive before the ferrets escape or they go madly insane.
So they tie their cuffs so the ferret can't squirm out
That's
of the bottom.
That's right. They tie the bottoms of their trousers and then put them down the front of their trousers.
Is this a way to impress women? Is this like medieval flirting?
I don't think it impresses women.
I think it might depress women, actually, rather than...
So I didn't realize these Cotswold Olympics were like a regular thing.
As travellers, where might we see it?
How do we know to find this?
If you go to Chipping Camden, there are signs up advertising when they'll be on.
And it's always in June, around midsummer.
So what else? What else might somebody bump into?
Well, something you'll see all the time, of course, is Morris dancing. Now, there's great debate about the history of this.
He's obsessed with Morris dancing.
But you see them everywhere. I see them.
And it's...
In the most unlikely places.
He wants to introduce it on the London
tour. So first of all, describe a Morris dancer, Roy. How do you know it's a Morris dancer?
Historically, well, they're always dressed in white.
And they're
sometimes,
men?
Well, men, certainly men, but more recent times, the last 20, 30 years, there's troops of female dancers as well.
Okay.
There's great debate about if it's age, and certainly there's no literary reference before the 14th century. And it almost died out just after the Industrial Revolution.
But these are quite, they always seem kind of feminine to me. They're sort of jolly. They're jumping up and down.
We like to think it reflects the English character.
Okay.
But they are very traditional dances.
My image is sort of like, almost, you know how Scottish dancers dance on their toes up and down? It's almost like that, but with tambourines
and bells on your ankles.
Mm. And are these guys available for hire, a little troupe of Morris dancers?
Yeah,
you're
absolutely.
Having a wedding, you have them come
usually
to your wedding?
Usually around pubs, though. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And you'll find them throughout the year, but of course, the main season really is from April through to the end of the summer.
But you're saying there's no historic significance to them?
Well, there is.
What is the
references to at least the 14th century.
Okay, so they go way back.
They say that the word Morris is a corruption of Moorish. In other words, it's so foreign that it was alluded to be of Middle Eastern origin, although they do think that, in fact, it is medieval European folk dancing.
Which also comes into their costume as well.
That's right.
Because they have these Moorish-style
Sort of Arabian, a little bit of a whiff of Arabia there.
Yeah.
What about Guy Fawkes? We hear a lot about Guy Fawkes, and you've got this big Guy Fawkes bonfire night.
Remember the 5th of November, Gunpowder, Treason and Plot.
Tell me what that's all about.
November 1605, gunpowder is found underneath Parliament.
So Guy Fawkes wanted to blow up Parliament.
It allegedly he and his followers wanted to blow up Parliament when the king was going to open Parliament.
No.
That is James I.
So the king was going to open Parliament. And why would somebody want to blow up Parliament because of that?
It was thought allegedly to be a Roman Catholic plot.
Oh, it was a Catholic against the Protestants running the country of
England. That was allegedly the accusation.
And did today you remember this? Are you celebrating Guy Fawkes? Are you demonizing him?
It's commemorated and he is burnt.
Okay, so it's an excuse to have a big burning.
You have a bonfire and theoretically you create this guy.
And it really is a reminder of those religious conflicts of the 16th and 17th centuries. In some places, well, most places, it is just Guy Fawkes. Down in Lewes in Sussex, they still burn an effigy of the Pope.
Mm. Oh, it is? So it has that serious religious conflict.
And it's very controversial.
What else would be fun to stumble into that we travellers should know about in England?
Oh, well, there's another custom in the Cotswold area, which is rolling a big cheese downhill. And men, of course, no women would do it, run down the hill after it.
A competition?
Yes.
So these are big cheeses. How big of a round of cheese are you talking?
It's a double Gloucester. It's, what, about clock size? Well,
size of a tire?
Not as big as that.
Half the size.
Half the size of a tire. So you roll this down the hill.
And they charge down the hill after it. And they tried to stop it a few years ago, health and safety.
Stop the cheese?
Stop the running. It was the thin end of the wedge.
Because of health and safety, what would be the concern?
Well, because people break legs and arms and ankles.
Like fell running. Yes. It's related to fell running.
Yes.
So a fell, what is a fell?
It's a mountain or a hill.
A mountain, so running across the mountains.
Yeah, it's just up and down. They have a prescribed course. They'll start in a village or down in the valley, run to the very top of the peak, and then back down again. And, of course, it's a first past the
post. That's so fun. I was at a clan gathering in Scotland last year, and everybody's doing their basic stuff, you know, tossing the caber and the dancing and everything. And then they blow a whistle, and all these guys, young and old, run out of the stadium or run out of the field, and then they're gone. And you don't see them for a long time, but they're running up to the top of the peak overlooking the festivities. And then, assuming they don't break their ankle, they will run all the way back down and see who's the winner.
And some of them are now adding at the end swimming as well. You have to, sort of like an Ironman thing. You jump into an ice cold.
And in Gloucestershire, you add the wheel of cheese to this whole mix. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking traditional English customs with our guides Tom Hooper, Gillian Chadwick, and Roy Nichols. What about pancake races?
Well, this takes place on Shrove Tuesday when people race with pancakes. But what they will do, they'll have a relatively short course, sometimes just a few hundred.
Just carrying a pancake or is it still
in a frying pan.
So you're holding a pancake and tossing it. You've got your pan and you're tossing it up in the air.
Yes. Yeah.
What a spectacle.
And with a bit of luck, it lands on your opponent. No, it's supposed to land in your pan.
So this is Shrove Tuesday. That's part of the whole
Easter sort of festivity.
Just before Lent.
Day before Ash Wednesday, isn't it?
Yes. Originally, it was a way of using up all the rich ingredients and having one big feast before.
Yeah. And this would have been quite a special thing as well in the old days, you know. Yeah.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about special things in the old days that are alive to this very day and that as travelers we can enjoy with the help of a good guide. And we've been joined by three great guides today for this discussion, Roy Nichols, Gillian Chadwick, and Tom Hooper. Thank you so much. And I'll see each of you in England sometime pushing a big wheel of cheese down a hill kicking shins or maybe even drop out a ferret down my pants. Right?
We could do all three with you.
All three at the same time. Now, that would be a spectacle. Thanks a lot and happy travels.
Thank you, Rick.
You're welcome.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton, Casimir Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Our website is managed by Andrew Wakely. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank, and radio affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. When you're traveling, find out when other stations air Travel with Rick Steves. There's a link to our affiliate listings in the radio section of our website. It's at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week for more Travel with Rick Steves.